Good morning, everybody. Let's call the Special Committee on the Rail Belt Energy System to order. It's about 3 minutes after nine. We have Senator Machicki here with us, Senator Gray Jackson, myself, Senator Coghill. I've heard that Senator Giesel will be along shortly. We have Carrie Cooper-Ryder, who's going to help us to make sure we stay on track here, and Brett Mello back here with the LIO. Neva Moss is helping over on this side, but the real staff to this committee, as everybody knows, is Rena Miller. Rena is going to come up and talk to us about a new version E, but let me give you just a little top-level discussion on this. I did this for my own benefit. In the Chapter 5, which is in 42, Chapter 5, this is where the Alaska Public Utilities Regulatory Act is. There are presently eight articles in that. And what we did, because of the way the modifications in the bill happened, they created a new Article 9 called Electric Reliability Organizations, Plans, and Standards, which I think is a better organization. So not only are we going to look at some of the details that we talked about last time, but we're talking about the structuring of the bill to fit really the articles. I'm just going to read down the articles to show you how it fits in. The Article 1 is powers and duties, 2 is certificate of public convenience and necessity, 3 is services and facilities, 4 is rates and rate schedules, 5 is accounts, records, and reports, 6 is financial management and regulation, 7 is judicial review, penalties, and enforcement, 8 is miscellaneous provisions, and then now a new 9, which is electric reliability organization plans and standards. So as you can see, the Regulatory Commission of Alaska has a clear duty, and what we'll do today is we're going to talk about how this reliability organization, its integrated resource plans, pre-approval, all fall in together. Probably one of the major issues that you'll see today that is different than the last is that we put the pre-approval planning underneath the authority or it has to be brought through the planning of a reliability organization under its resource planning. So we've been joined with Senator Schauer. Good morning, Senator Schauer. And so last time we adopted a version K, and this time I think because of the reorganization, Senator Machicki, we have a version E. What I'd like it to do is get a motion to adopt the E version for the Rail Belt Utility Reliability Organization as our working document. Do you have a motion that you can make for me?
I do, Mr. Chairman. I move that the committee adopt CS31-LS0959/ECHO as the working document.
Thank you, and I'm going to object so that we can go through the process of seeing how this reorganization and some of the issues that we brought up in our last meeting and some of the remaining issues. Rena Miller will go through this. There is an explanation of changes as well as a draft bill in front of you. So, Rena Miller, please put yourself on the record, and let's just walk through the E version of Senate Bill CS for Senate Bill 123.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Rena Miller. I am staff to Senator Giesel on loan to the Special Committee for the purposes of this bill. As Senator Coghill explained, we have significantly restructured SB 123, and as we walk through the summary of changes, I'll flag what subsections from the old version have been brought into a new section in the new version.
Before you go, I wanted to make sure that the members of the committee know that we have Noah Klein, who is a drafter, online, so that if they have a question for you, you can defer to Noah if you need to get into the technicals of it. Rena, please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So on version E, page 1, line 8, creates the new Article 9A in AS 4205, Alaska Public Utilities Regulatory Act. On page 1, line 9, we create a new section, 4205-760, called Electric Reliability Organizations. This section draws from the former subsections A, B, D, E, and F. Then on page 1, line 12, through page 2, line 2, we have revised the provision that was previously inserted that clarifies if all the utilities in an interconnected system are exempt from RCA rate regulation as municipal entities or instrumentalities of the state, the RCA may not require that they form an ERO. And Mr. Chairman, I believe on this point there was some concern from some folks that this maybe should say shall not, and I believe that's why you asked for our drafter, Noah Klein, to be online to explain why shall not is contrary to legislative drafting standards and why may not accomplishes that.
Sure.
That intent.
In most of the language we have, if you may do something, that's permissive. If you may not do it, that's directive. And so, Noah, can you help explain to us why that is equivalent to shall not?
Through the chair, this is Noah Klein, Legislative Legal Services. In our drafting manual, we very clearly just distinguish between shall as a duty on someone and the words may not, imposing a prohibition upon someone. And so may not is a clear directive in the Alaska statutes that the commission cannot do something. May not is saying do not do it. It's direct. Shall not is something that we explicitly say do not use in our drafting manual, and we try to avoid it.
Thank you. And I think that needs to be clear, especially for the folks in the SEPA region that feel that they could be drawn into this. And I think it's important to know that when we say may not, that is directive. So, Senator Schauer.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just with him online real quick with Noah, just to make sure as we go through language where you see may not or may, is the inverse true if you say may versus shall as opposed to may not versus shall?
I'm not sure. Through the chair, this is Noah Klein, Legislative Legal Services. I'm not sure I understand the question, but I don't think it's true. Shall is may itself is a permissive term. It's granting permission. So, for example, in areas of our statutes, we say a regulatory body may adopt regulations as opposed to shall adopt regulations. When it says shall, it's direct. The commission or the agency shall do this. When the statutes say may, it's there is the authority to do it. It's granting that authority, but it's not a requirement.
Mr. Chairman, I think he's answered the question. I just want it on the record because this is kind of a trick of English,
yeah,
where it's a little backwards. And so when you say may not, I can see the confusion. But if somebody says may, it is permissive. And that's why I think we answered one side of it but not the other as we're talking through it, if that makes sense.
I can just tell you anecdotally, when my mother said I may have a cookie, that was easy. But when I may not, that was very clear. All right. Thank you. Rena, please continue.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, we are on page 2. On line 8, we have a conforming change to the new bill structure where we cite D of this section. On page 2, lines 15, and again on 18, likewise, we have conforming changes to the new bill structure. On page 2, line 25, to page 3, line 1, this is a new provision. This allows the RCA to certify an electric reliability organization for a network that doesn't technically qualify as a system. The RCA suggested this as one of those items to plan for the future eventualities that we don't know of right now in today's world. Moving on to page 3, line 1. Creates the new section 4205-762, Duties of an Electric Reliability Organization. This language comes directly from former subsection C. On page 3, lines 5, lines 10 through 11, and lines 13 to 14, we change interconnected bulk electric system to interconnected electric energy transmission network.
And that was at the request of the Regulatory Commission, if I understand correctly.
Mr. Chairman, the Regulatory Commission did conduct multiple levels of review on the CS, and what we've done, you'll see some adjustments to those definitions of those two terms as we get to the end of the bill, tweaking those to add great clarity and avoiding any potential ambiguity or whatnot, resulted in some term switch-outs throughout the bill, which
okay,
I will
thank
apply.
You.
Absolutely.
I think we just need to watch that. Thank you.
Yes. Page 3, line 6, we have a conforming change to the new bill structure where we cite 4205780A. Page 3, line 14, we have a conforming change to the new bill structure where we cite specific sections again. Page 3, line 29, we create a new section, 4205765, Reliability Standards. This brings in the former subsections G, H, I, O, and N.
This is part of the restructuring to make it more clear.
Yes.
Under those standards, okay?
Absolutely. Moving on to page 4, on line 1, twice on line 7 to 8, and on line 14, we again change interconnected bulk electric system to interconnected electric energy transmission network. On page 4, line 10, we are saying that standards may provide for protection from a cybersecurity incident. That used to say may provide for cybersecurity protection. Cybersecurity incident, however, is a term that we define in the definitions section, so the drafter changed this to conform. Page 4, line 15, this was a suggestion that we have discussed, was brought up by the utilities. Standards may result in, but may not be designed for the purpose of, requiring enlargement of facilities. Page 4, line 18, this removes a requirement for the RCA to hold a hearing before simply approving or accepting a standard. It also removes references to the RCA's ability to reject a plan. This has the effect, again, as we discussed, of applying existing statute where the RCA is able to reject a tariff provision only for form and filing. That's already an existing law. This then ties to that. We're not trying to give them a new method of rejecting a standard in this legislation.
The public hearing was removed because of the way that they do that?
So, Mr. Chairman, if an ERO files a standard, the RCA has to publicly notice that filing, and then absent any protest from people involved, the RCA, as with their current tariff provisions, feels it's appropriate to simply approve it without a hearing.
But if there's a protest, they proceed with public comment.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
I just wanted to make that clear as yes. we were going through this.
And of course, if I can remind you that we have further down in the same subsection B created more backstops if they want to modify something. So this is just a blanket approval.
Okay.
Page 4, line 22, we remove a reference to rejecting a standard. Again, same purpose as we just discussed. Moving on to page 5, lines 8 through 14, this is a new provision. You heard testimony from Doyon Utilities last time that you met, and there was concern that the ERO might enact standards that could potentially conflict with the standards and rules that Doyon Utilities is under via contract with Department of Defense. Speaking with Doyon, it's clearly these often can change without much notice to them, and those need to trump about everything. So we've worked language here that essentially says if you're subject to a particular rule as a condition of your contract with the Department of Defense, then and if that conflicts then with the reliability standard brought by the ERO, you follow the federal standard and rules while the commission resolves the conflict. We also say very clearly on lines 12 and 13, the commission may not resolve the conflict in a manner that prevents fulfilling that contract with the Department of Defense.
Senator Schauer?
Just to be clear for the record on that one, looking through this, because obviously with DOD, they do change quickly depending on what happens. And federal government with the supremacy laws kind of puts us into a square corner at times. So what I'm hearing you say, even though it's not necessarily spelled out, but it probably will be as the rest is written, is that there is nothing in here that's going to prevent them from being nimble and flexing to meet those needs. And the commission itself, anything that is created under this will not have the ability to stop them from doing that. That's what this means, correct?
Senator Schauer, through the chair, yes. They will need to notify the commission if there is a conflict so that the commission is aware of that conflict and can be sure that entity is therefore exempt from having to comply with the ERO's standard, but it's very clear that, that the commission may not resolve it in a way that prevents compliance with the Department of Defense.
It sounds pretty clear, Mr. Chairman. I just want that on the record because, I mean, you have multiple organizations you're creating, and the devil's in the details when the regulation's written. So
it's kind of interesting, too, because we have Joint Base Elmendorf. We have Clear Air Force Station. We have Fort Wainwright and Eielson. All eventually will have some interconnection with the, but they all also go on very different regulations. There are going to be places where their impact on the transmission is going to be felt, and so they need to be aware of it. But this makes sure we can't change what DOD requires.
Continuing on page 5 on line 18, this creates, again with the restructuring, new section 4205767 rules. This was former subsection P as in Paul. On page 5, line 26, we create the new section 4205770 regulations. This was the former subsection Q. On page 5, lines 28 through 29, we have conforming changes to the new bill structure, where we now reference the new sections that, that are created. On page 5, line 30, to page 6, line 2, this again was discussed at the request of the utilities and with the endorsement of the RCA. Previously, the regulations that the RCA was to adopt were to enable, may require, an open access transmission tariff. This has been amended so that the RCA's regulations shall require an ERO tariff to include standards for non-discriminatory open access transmission and interconnection and provisions for transmission system cost recovery. Continuing on page 6, lines 8 through 11, again, with the restructuring, this creates the new section 4205772, duties of load-serving entities. This is a new provision, and it clarifies that all load-serving entities, even those that are otherwise exempt from RCA regulation, are subject to the Electric Reliability Organization's tariff.
Mr. Chairman, just a question. I apologize. My brain's a little slow this morning.
Oh, that's
just,
right.
just from your perspective, thank you. Sorry, should have asked that first. Thinking two things at once here. On the previous one, just from your recollection of this, I believe this was one of the red lines that had kind of come up. Is this a change that's going to it was about the tariffs and the transmission. Is this one of those that is cleaning up one of those issues that we were going to have that there was some resistance, if that's the best way to say it?
Senator Schauer, through the chair, the utilities have supported this language. Absolutely. They have supported this language and the concept of enabling these transmission and interconnection options for the future.
Well, this is the way we're talking about the open access, right? No, this
yes.
is, yeah. This is, if you're going to supply power, you need to be able to be a part of the tariff structure, basically.
Mr. Chairman, yes, so these, again, they require that the RCA write regulations requiring that the ERO's tariff include these provisions, right? And these provisions will include standards for non-discriminatory open access and transmission, and that is the type of thing that would enable more economic dispatch potentially throughout the grid. And then as far as the provisions for transmission system cost recovery, it's the ERO as sort of a management organization is not necessarily the one that would be managing that, but would have standards saying how that cost recovery needs to work.
Well
that
said.
Cost recovery would be done by others.
Yep. Well said. All right.
Let's see. Page 6, line 12. Make sure I have my page 6. Excuse me. Again, with the restructuring, we have created new section 4205775, penalties. This wraps in the former subsections J, K, L, and M. On page 6, lines 13 to 14, line 21, and lines 24 to 25, we again change interconnected bulk electric system to interconnected electric energy transmission network. On page 6, lines 28 through 29, we have a conforming change related to the restructuring. And also on page 7, line 4, a conforming change related to the restructuring.
Question. Page 6.
Senator Machiki has a question on page 6 before we move.
This may be for the drafter, but it's up to you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just wondering why on page 6, line 16, the word violated seems like failed to comply with a reliability standard would be violated seems to suggest that a violation has occurred rather than someone that perhaps had not yet failed to comply with that standard. Is there a reason they chose to go that way?
I think if you look in Section A, the imposition of a fine is based on a violation of a reliability if they've been given notice and that then they find that they, in fact, did violate them. So I think this is appropriate. Because the if is you have to prove that they did violate, in fact. So
I guess in a scenario where someone may change a standard and it's been approved by the commission and someone has not yet had the opportunity to comply, to me this seems like strong language in that case. When you think about this moving forward, particularly someone that may not be one of the utilities, it may be someone providing capacity on the line, it may take some time to get to that point before folks are able to comply to that standard. And sort of calling it out as a violation to me seems like relatively strong language.
I think one of the things, you go back to how the makeup of any standard is with the Electric Reliability Organization. Everybody has a seat at the table, so you would see that way before it came anyway. Rena, you had some point you wanted to bring up on that?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Senator Machiki, on line 7, there's a little comfort valve here, I think I would call it, up on lines 4 through 6, subsection D. You do, as the chairman said, have notices, so the standards don't just go into effect. They will be noticed. They will be reviewed by the RCA. There would be some sort of publication to users, owners, and operators that this thing has taken effect. So if you do have a violation, when we talk about penalties and compliance, any penalties do have to take into account efforts made to remedy the violation, as the bill says, in a timely manner. And so I think while you may have non-compliance or a violation, there may be honest good faith efforts to bring into compliance, in which case that would be accounted for within the penalty.
So Mr. Chairman, so you're saying on page 5, where until the conflict is resolved by the commission, is that what you're referring to in subsection D?
On page 5. Senator Machiki, through the chair, no, I'm looking on page 7 at the top, subsection D as in Delta, where we talk about the penalties that would exist for a violation. And referencing to back on A related to penalties, you can only impose these after giving notice and holding a hearing. There is some process involved.
And for those listening in, the section D says a penalty imposed under this section must bear a reasonable relation to the seriousness of the violation and take into consideration the effort of a user, owner, or operator to remedy the violation in a timely manner. So,
Mr. Chairman, I hear what you're saying. I think there's something in between before you get to this point, but that's fine. If you choose to go that way, I don't think I'm going to make a big effort to make a change, but I think there's something between not complying and a violation that I would assume that these parties would work through before you get to that point. And it just seems like this is the next step when someone sort of is just not making the cut on complying to the standard. But that's okay. This simplifies it. I think there's room for an in-between, and you would hope the commission would find a way to remedy the situation prior to a violation.
But there are two ways a penalty can happen. One is through this electric reliability organization, and then there's also one through the RCA process. So there are two different tiers here. One is giving the authority to this reliability organization that has not previously been. So what we're trying to do is give them significant authority to say, we make the rules, you got to stand up to them. Senator Machicki? I mean, Senator Schauer.
It doesn't offend me, sir.
Just kidding.
Just a quick question on this to clarify, because it brings up an interesting point I hadn't thought of, but reading this here the way it's worded, is the ultimate and the only arbiter at the top would be the commission? That's as far as the appeal process goes. Anything outside of that would have to take place in a legal venue? If it came to that, is that, I see head shaking, yes.
Senator Schauer, through the chair, that would be the process, okay. Yes. A penalty brought by the Electric Reliability Organization can be appealed to the RCA. A penalty brought by the RCA can be reconsidered under current RCA process, but then does, in fact, go to the courts because the RCA is a quasi-judicial entity. And we are moving on to page 7, line 10. We changed the term interconnected bulk electric system to interconnected and electric energy transmission network. On page 7, lines 19 through 20, what we've done is reposition the requirement for the RCA to review the process used in developing an IRP, an integrated resource plan, so that consideration needs to be made before the RCA decides to take any action on an integrated resource plan. This was previously down on line 27, which would suggest that the commission only needs to consider the process used for developing the plan if they choose to modify it. However, the commission should be taking that into account when they decide whether to simply approve. So we have repositioned that provision. On page 8, line 8, the drafter has changed the word submission to filing to conform. On page 8, line 17, we have added into the section heading pre-approval for large energy facilities. On page 8, lines 18 to 19 and lines 22 to 23, the term interconnected bulk electric system has been changed to interconnected electric energy transmission network. On page 8, line 19, language is added that clarifies project pre-approval is required only for those projects that are in a network served by an electric reliability organization.
Which is a concept we thought was, I thought was in the bill, but it became clear that this pre-approval process could have been outside of the ERO organization. This puts it underneath it very clearly.
Mr. Chair. On page 8, line 29, we have a conforming change to reference the new section numbers. Moving on to page 9. On lines 2 to 3, these are the types of things that are exempt from the requirement from project pre-approval. We added also exempt as a hydropower project licensed by FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, between September 1, 2016 and July 1, 2021. This was drafted, my directions were in error, and it needed to read before September 30th, 2016. So the chairman would have a change pending.
We're going to have probably half a dozen or so cleanups just like this issue where we change the words conforming for the most part.
On page 9, line 10, and on page 9, line 31 to page 10, line 1, we changed the term interconnected bulk electric system to interconnected electric energy transmission network. On page 9, line 27, This creates the new section 4205-790 definitions. Formally, the terms being defined in the bill applied throughout 4205, the Public Utilities Regulatory Act. This constrains the definitions and the terms being defined to the new electric reliability organization provisions in Article 9A. On page 10, line 3, we change, we have a conforming change to reference the new section for the restructuring. On page 10, lines 6 through 7, the definition for that interconnected bulk electric system has been modified. Essentially, going down to lines 10, 11, and 12 on interconnected electric energy transmission network, those lines specifying the plant or the infrastructure, electric generation resources, transmission lines, interconnections, and associated equipment used to be in the system definition. They've been moved down to the network definition. On page 10, lines 17 to 18, the definition of load-serving entity has been refined to clarify that a load-serving entity is a utility with an obligation to distribute power to more than 10 customers that receive invoices directly from the entity. And then on page 10, line 20, again, we change interconnected bulk electric system to interconnected electric energy transmission network. And that is, those are the changes that were made into work draft version E, Mr. Chairman.
We do have Chris Rose online who wants to testify, and I did not close public testimony, but before we get there, we do have, as I said, Noah Klein, who's a drafter, online with us, and we have Kirk Warren with the Alaska Energy Authority who's on for questions as well. Rena, you had something to add.
Mr. Chairman, I believe you wanted to go over the two likely substantive amendments.
Yeah, we did have I've got some highlighted in my bill. You might want to just follow along real quick and start. Let's just run through this real quick so that those listening in see what we're working off of.
I have a quick question on that before we go.
Before we go to this, Senator Schauer, you got a question?
Yes, sir. Do you, right here, so back to page 10 on line 16, 6, subsection 6, load-serving entity. I'm only asking this because I honestly didn't think about this until now, but I've been catching up with this with the adding other capacity to the system as this kind of you block and tackle your way through this as it potentially grows. And it actually just fired off this memory, Mr. Chairman. I'm just curious how it would impact it. Like if you have a small area where we were looking at a piece of property and they have generation and there's more than 10 properties on there. So would this force those entities to be a part of this, or do they have the option to not be a part of it? I guess what I'm asking is, is this going to somehow force some of these other pieces around the belt as this grows to have to be a part of that if they serve more than 10? Does that require that? Does that make sense, the question? I'm not sure if it does, but
yeah, I think that's a reasonable question. There's a reason this is in here, but there's several things to talk about. For example, who is regulated, who has a certificate to operate, and how do they serve customers? Rena?
Sure. Senator Schauer, through the chair. Senator Schauer, to your specific question, this load-serving entity has to actually be an electric utility. Which is, first of all, a pretty high bar for somebody that might serve 10 customers. If there's an existing utility expanding to, you know, serve another 10 in a subdivision, that's already part of a utility that's connected and would be subject to the ERO.
Mr. Chairman, I think she answered the question. That was what I was asking. I had not made that connection before, but I know there are small places where people have their own power generation, and you just really answered the question of what has to happen for that to be.
Rena, also, doesn't this fall out to some of our DOD questions on you have a utility that may be serving a base as a single customer, right?
Yes, through the chair. Load-serving entities have certain obligations in relation to the electric reliability organization, and one of the big ones is that the costs of the operational costs of the ERO itself are to be spread amongst those load-serving entities, right? Because then those costs can be passed on to the ratepayers through a surcharge. What the ratepayers get in exchange for that, of course, is reliability, cybersecurity protections, all of those kinds of things. Load-serving entities can not just be so sometimes you may have an electric utility that's a load-serving entity that is, for example, an IPP, an independent power producer. They don't have customers that pay direct invoices the way that we're thinking of an electric utility having those. So we've tried to kind of restrict that using the requiring more than 10 customers. Receiving invoices directly from the entity does go to Doyon Utilities, where Doyon Utilities has, on one interpretation, many, many, many customers, whether they're businesses or homes or facilities on base. But technically, the utility is paid via one invoice from the federal government. So trying to make sure that we're not passing on those costs in a perhaps non-productive way.
So Reneva just passed out kind of the markup to the legal draft of version E before the committee, so you can run through that. I think it has some of your notes on there.
Sure, Mr. Chairman. Let me access my copy if that's the preferred. Well, and Mr. Chairman, your staff has bailed me out.
That way we're all working off the same notes.
Sure,
and it'll be probably easier for you to explain since you got to make the notes. And we'll have them drafted accordingly and brought before us on Wednesday. And my intention is, if there's any other issues after we talk about these, I think we've hammered this out pretty evenly. Now that we've got it organized into this new section, I think it's clearly readable by both the utilities and RCA. It's good for us to get our arms around. So please continue, Rena.
Absolutely. Mr. Chairman, we are working on version E. Line 4 through 5 on page 1, the title currently discusses requiring project approval for public utilities interconnected with interconnected bulk electric systems. The fact of the matter is that it may not just be for public utilities, but other large energy facilities. And so the recommendation to the drafter would be to delete public utilities interconnected with interconnected bulk electric systems and simply change it to certain large energy facilities to align better with the section heading. On page 1, line 12. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr.
Senator Machicki.
It seems important that the word interconnected remain in the title. Wouldn't it be certain large interconnected energy facilities be more appropriate than scrapping the interconnected word in the title?
Senator Machicki, through the chair, I think that's a great thing for us to flag to the drafter as we request this change.
Thank you.
I will make a note. And moving on, I believe the notation in the margin on line 12 is actually not related to the prospective changes. So we'll move on to the top of page 2, line 1, where electric utilities should be load-serving entities. On page 2, line 8, we reference compliance with D of this section. I believe that was overlooked in the restructuring, and it actually needs to comply with the new section 4205-762. On page 2, line 20, in prefacing that load-serving entities connected with a system can petition the commission for an exemption to form an ERO, it's recommended by the RCA to add notwithstanding the requirements of D of this section. D of this section is where the RCA is directed to form an electric reliability organization. We also would like to speak with the drafter about actually moving E ab- above D, making it the new D, to make it clear that there's a process in line. The RCA does not need to be creating an ERO if we can first have these utilities ask and receive a waiver. Moving on to page 3 on line 6, an integrated resource plan should be integrated resource plans. This contemplates an integrated resource plan is there'll be one for the electric reliability organization at any given time, but that organization will theoretically have to do multiple versions as the years go by. On lines 18 through 19, we would propose deleting developing reliability standards and this is a sensitive area. This is where the ERO must show that it has rules to provide for reasonable notice, for public process, for openness, for balancing interests. Previously, we said in developing standards and exercising its duties. Developing standards is one of multiple duties of this entity, and we should not be trying to convey in any way that they should not use those qualities in only certain areas. Moving on to we're good on page 4 and 5. Moving on to page 6. At the top on line 2, to conform with the previous provision, just reading it, we will change provisions to standards. Down to line 23 on page 6, this is one reference of interconnected bulk electric system that needs to be interconnected electric energy transmission network. On page 7, in integrated resource planning, both on lines 9 and on line 13, we would like to insert the word all before customers. And this is actually a pretty important provision substantially, the intent. The intent is to make sure that when you're looking at the requirements of all these customers in a network and how to meet their needs and their service requirements, it needs to be of every customer within there, whether they are whether they are served by a load-serving entity or not. That's an important thing to make sure that the integrated resource planning is accounting for. On page 7, line 19, a recommendation is to delete a hearing. So we've talked a lot about this in relation to the standards and how the RCA manages a standard that's filed. This is how the RCA manages an integrated resource plan that is filed with it as a petition. Standards are considered tariff provisions. The RCA has existing statute related to how it will act related to tariff provisions. The IRP will be filed as a petition. That's a little bit different, and we don't have some of that existing language within the RCA statutes to rely on. So we're going to spell it out a little bit more clearly here. So essentially, the commission shall, after public notice and a review of the process used, approve or modify a plan. We go down a little later, and it says that if after public notice and a hearing, the commission concludes that the plan requires modification. So for approval, we don't require a hearing. For modification, we do require a hearing. And we take out the option on line 20 for the RCA to simply reject an integrated resource plan. And instead, we'll add language that is pulled from the RCA's current statutes on how to reject a tariff filing. That essentially says the commission may reject all or part of a petition that does not comply with former filing regulations. So the only way the commission can reject an integrated resource plan filed is if it doesn't meet their filing specifications, basically. Not because they don't like the integrated resource plan or something like that. Moving on to page 8 on line 5, the public utility should be a public utility. On lines 25 through 26, I believe that the term in a cost-effective manner should follow the word would. On page 9, we have previously discussed the change that's being recommended on line 3 related to the hydropower project exemptions from pre-approval. And I believe that does it, Mr. Chairman.
That's it. Senator Machiki.
Just have a comment on page 6.
lines 20 through 26, not a huge deal, but a lot of redundancy. If you look at line 27, we've determined who that party is we're talking about. And in line 27, we simplified to a user, owner, or operator. There's room for that in paragraph B.
Senator Michicki, you are absolutely correct. I'll make that recommendation to the drafter with the chair's okay.
Yes. Yeah, let's do that. Pretty good editor.
Sorry.
So with the permission of the committee, what I'd like to do is go ahead and have that drafted up with the suggestions, bring it back before us as a new CS, and then if you have other amendments, I'd like to entertain those on Monday. We did have, I did leave public, Rena, yes?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, on Wednesday?
Isn't that when we had another meeting scheduled?
Wednesday. Today's Monday.
The next meeting, Wednesday. I don't even know what I said, so I must have really, must have been reading while I was talking. Sorry about that. Senator Michicki, you have a question?
So just to clarify, we'll be making some changes and bring the bill up Monday. We're talking about moving it out on Wednesday, perhaps.
Right.
I assume you're going to leave public testimony open for Wednesday's meeting in case, since it hasn't really sat on the table.
Yeah, no, I think since we've been modifying it all along, most people have, we've been sending out these versions to stakeholders along the way, RCA, members of the utilities and members who are concerned. In fact, I do have one of them to testify today, so I'll get his testimony online here in a minute. But so I'm going to remove my objection so we can get this draft before us, and then, but we'll have another draft come up with some of these suggestions, and then if there's any other amendments that you all think that are necessary, Wednesday would be a good day to bring them up. And my hope is that we can once again take a look at what we've got before us and move it on to the next committee referral, which is finance.
So, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Michicki.
My question was just in case there's something that comes up, because the stakeholders are not the public. I assume you're not going to close public testimony
no.
today.
Okay. I'm not. My intention is not to close public testimony.
Okay. That's perfect.
No,
thank you.
This is an open process all the way until we get this onto the floor, and then we debate it.
Excellent. Thank you.
With that, I do have Chris Rose, who's the executive director of the Renewable Energy Project for Alaska, online, and he did want to testify. And so, Chris, put yourself on the record and give us your public testimony at this point.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm sorry, I had met just to monitor
okay.
this morning and not to testify, but having followed closely along, I am very pleased with all the improvements to the bill, and that can conclude my public testimony.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And we also, by the way, had John Burns with Golden Valley listening in as well. With that, I think we have managed to cover the changes. I'll remove my objection to adopting the e-version with the expectation that we'll have some cleanup on the e-version coming up Wednesday. Any other discussion before we move on? I'd say we have managed to work it pretty well. And Rena, thank you for your diligence in getting it. And for those members who are listening in, who are part of the utilities, part of the stakeholders, RCA included, I really appreciate the very thoughtful work that went into it. It looks like we're getting a body of law that is going to be very workable. With that, I'm going to adjourn the committee. It looks like it's about 9:52.